Sunday. We're in Judges chapter 6 today. It's page 216 in those little Bibles there in front of you. Page 216, Judges chapter 6. We've got quite a few verses to read here because I want you to get the story in mind. And so we're going to be in Judges chapter 6. We're going to look at verses 1 through 16, and then we're going to jump over to chapter 7, but I'll let you know when we get to that point. So page 216, Judges chapter 6, we're going to look at verses 1 to 16 and then skip over into chapter 7. Again, the Israelites did what was evil in the Lord's sight. So the Lord handed them over to the Midianites for 7 years. The Midianites were so cruel that they had the Israelites, that the Israelites fled to the mountains where they made hiding places for themselves in caves and dens. Whenever the Israelites planted their crops, marauders from Midian, Amalek, and the people of the east would attack Israel, camping in the land and destroying crops as far away as Gaza. They left the Israelites with nothing to eat, taking all the sheep, oxen, and donkeys. These enemy hordes, coming with their cattle and tents as thick as locusts, arrived on droves of camels too numerous to count. By the way, let me just pause there. The Midianites were the first people credited with taking camels and using them for their own benefit, especially within warfare. Okay, so that's why it appears here in the Bible, if you're wondering why would it matter about the camels, because they're the first ones to do so. Okay, all right, let's continue on. And they stayed until the land was stripped bare, verse 6. So Israel was reduced to starvation by the Midianites. Then the Israelites cried out to the Lord for help. When they cried out to the Lord because of Midian, the Lord sent a prophet to the Israelites. He said, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I brought you up out of slavery in Egypt and rescued you from the Egyptians and from all who oppressed you. I drove out your enemies and gave you their land. I told you, I am the Lord your God. You must not worship the God of the Amorites in whose land you now live, but you have not listened to me." Then the angel of the Lord came and sat beneath the oak tree at Ophrah, which belonged to Joash of the clan of Abiezer. Gideon, son of Joash, had been threshing wheat at the bottom of a wine press to hide the grain from the Midianites. The angel of the Lord appeared to him and said, "Mighty hero, the Lord is with you." "Sir," Gideon replied, "if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? And where are all the miracles our ancestors told us about? Didn't they say the Lord brought us out of Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us and handed us over to the Midianites." Then the Lord turned to him and said, "Go with your strength you have and rescue Israel from the Midianites. I am sending you." "But Lord," Gideon replied, "how can I rescue Israel? My clan is the weakest in the whole tribe of Manasseh, and I am the least in my entire family." The Lord said to him, "I will be with you, and you will destroy the Midianites as if you were fighting against one man." Now let's skip over to chapter 7. We're going to look at verses 2 through 8, and then we'll skip down some again. Verse 2 in chapter 7. The Lord said to Gideon — this is the time when Gideon is getting all the warriors together, and he's all excited that they're going to go and fight, okay? The Lord said to Gideon, "You have too many warriors with you. If I let all of you fight the Midianites, the Israelites will boast to me that they saved themselves by their own strength. Therefore tell the people, whoever is timid or afraid may leave and go home." 22,000 of them went home, leaving only 10,000 who were willing to fight. But the Lord told Gideon, "There are still too many. Bring them down to the spring, and I will sort out who will go with you and who will not." When Gideon took his warriors down to the water, the Lord told him, "Divide the men into two groups. In one group put all those who cup water in their hands and lap it up with their tongues like dogs. In the other group, put all those who kneel down and drink with their mouths in the stream." Only 300 of the men drank from their hands. All the others got down on their knees and drank with their mouths in the stream. The Lord told Gideon, "With these 300 men, I will rescue you and give you victory over the Midianites. Send all the others home." So Gideon collected the provisions and ram's horns of the other warriors and sent them home, but he kept the 300 with him. Now then, skip down to verse 16. He divided the 300 men into three groups and gave each man a ram's horn and a clay jar with a torch in it. Then he said to them, "Keep your eyes on me. When I come to the edge of the camp, do just as I do. As soon as my group blows the ram's horns, those of you on the other side of the camp, blow your horns and shout for the Lord and for Gideon." It was just after midnight, after the changing of the guard, when Gideon and the 100 men with him reached the outer edge of the Midianite camp. Suddenly they blew the horns and broke their clay jars. Then all three groups blew their horns and broke their jars. They held the blazing torches in their left hands and the horns in their right hands and shouted, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon." Each man stood at his position around the camp and watched as all the Midianites rushed around in a panic, shouting as they ran. When the 300 Israelites blew their horns, the Lord caused the warriors in the camp to fight each other with their own swords. So here we have the story of Gideon. It's one of my favorite stories, and I hope that it'll become one of your favorite stories, because it's during one of the worst times of Israel's history. They literally have so little food that they are having to hide what little that they have down in like wine presses and caves and dens. In other words, basically down in wells, you know, where they would have to travel down into where it was dingy and dirty, and that was the way they were having to thresh out their wheat, and that was the way that they were staying alive. And so here's Gideon down in a wine press, and he's threshing out this wheat so that they'll have some food to eat. And all of a sudden, the angel of the Lord shows up. And did you notice what the angel of the Lord said to Gideon? He addresses him this way: "Mighty hero." How many mighty heroes do you know down in a wine press hiding, threshing out wheat, that is too scared to go up top to fight? I don't know about you, but that's not usually where I find my heroes. My heroes are usually on the front lines, or at least heading in that direction, and Gideon is far from there. And the angel of the Lord shows up and says, "Mighty hero." Now, you know Gideon had to go, is there somebody else around? Is there somebody else here? How would you feel if you were in that position? You're hiding. You know that if they catch you, they could kill you or beat you. Something torturous happened to you. Take what you had done, what little food that you had, take it away from you. And all of a sudden, an angel shows up and says, "Mighty hero." Wouldn't you kind of do one of, you know, what is this all about? I'm not a mighty hero. And you notice what Gideon does? Even with an angel showing up, he begins to explain how it's impossible that he could ever do something great. He says, "You don't understand. My clan is the weakest, okay? In other words, my family is the smallest clan of the smallest tribe. We're not much, okay? We don't have big homes. We don't have a whole lot of stuff. We don't even have a whole lot of people. I'm of the weakest of the weak. And then I'm the least in my family." In other words, I'm the run of the litter. "What are you doing calling me mighty hero? I'm not a mighty hero." And you know what I think of so many times is we think with God, well, once God makes me famous, I can do something great for him. Or once God makes me wealthy, I can give a lot back to the church and to God. Or once God makes me smart enough biblically, I can do something great for him. Once I know enough about Jesus, then I can finally do something. Did you know that's never a prerequisite for God using you? It wasn't a prerequisite here. And I think so many times that's what we do. We kind of play the when God, or once I get to this point, once I'm smart enough, you know, once I'm in my 40s, and we just play this game with God. And I think we all in the back of our minds say, well, you know, if I had an angel of the Lord show up for me and call me mighty hero and say, you know, this, then I'd do it. No, we would do exactly what Gideon did. We would immediately say, well, you don't understand. No one's going to listen to me. I don't have that kind of influence. When God calls to us, even if an angel showed up, I can guarantee you 95% of us or more would look at the angel and start arguing. You don't understand. This is not going to work. I realize that you're calling me to it. And I realize it could probably happen, but you've got the wrong person. You need to go down there and talk to them. They're the most influential. They're also the most affluential. You know, they've got money. They got all this other stuff. people listen to them. People don't really listen to me. I'm just kind of working the regular job type thing. I don't know that people are going to pay much attention to me. I'm just a college student. You know, what could God? You know what happens? We play this game with God, and even if an angel of the Lord showed up on your front doorstep and my front doorstep, knocked at the door, and I answered, and if the angel of the Lord said, "Mighty hero," I wouldn't say, "Here I am." I would more than likely say, "Is there somebody else here? Is Jason standing by, you know, is Jason standing behind me or something?" You know, it's always somebody else. You know, somebody else is going to step up to the plate. And what God does is he takes us and helps us to dream big and prepares us for an adventure that only he can give. And so don't believe the lie that you've placed in your mind that you've bought into, well, if the angel of the Lord ever shows up to me, I'll go and do it. You'll argue. Immediately, all your fears will come to the forefront. How's this going to happen? What's going to happen? If the angel of the Lord ever shows up on your doorstep, the only question you should be asking is, which direction am I supposed to go in? But almost every biblical character that you find always begins to start making excuses or asking questions. How can this be? I don't understand how you can do this. Almost every single one of them. And a lot of times we elevate the people in the Bible and we think, oh, they were so much more godly and so much more spiritual than me. But if you look at most of them, they always argued with God. Even when he sent an angel, they would argue, I don't understand. Well, how are you going to do that? Well, I don't see how this can happen. So don't buy into the lie that, well, if God ever, you know, rings it through the sound system, you know, if you will do this, I will be with you, then I'll do it. No, you won't. You'll sit there and argue, well, tell me more, you know, and we'll try to make bargains with God. And I think a lot of times God places big dreams within us, but we push to the side because we go, well, once I get old enough, or, well, once I make money, or, well, once I have enough influence, well, you know, people don't listen to me as much. I'm kind of the least of, and Gideon did the same thing. Can you imagine arguing with an angel? It's kind of absurd when you really think about it. You know, meeting one would be like, whoa. But then to argue, well, I don't see how this can happen. Well, did you think an angel of the Lord was going to appear? Probably not. That was pretty spectacular. Maybe some more will appear and help you, or at least do some things behind the scenes. And Gideon begins to argue and begins to try to talk the angel of the Lord out of it. I'm the least man. You don't understand. I'm the run of the family, even of the least of the clan. Pick somebody else. Let me tell you what God calls us to, and it's kind of a strange thing, but he really calls us to surrender. You may say, well, that is kind of odd, because here God is calling Gideon to fight, but he's really calling him to surrender. The surrendering part is what brings him the power of God. If he doesn't surrender to this task, he doesn't get the power of God in his life. Let me tell you what surrender literally means. Surrender is when God uses unsure, insecure, and fearful people and does what only God can do. Now, the good news is most of us fit in those categories, if not every single one of them. And if you really inventory your life, you'll probably say, you know, there's a good chance I fit in all three of those categories of being unsure and insecure and fearful. You know, we applaud the people that take risks, but we ourselves won't take a risk. And we long to be the person that will take the risk, but we slink back. And Gideon was at this crossroads of, am I going to believe this or not? You got to remember, when he begins to look at this stage, he knows that the Midianites have 200,000 warriors at their disposal. That's a lot of people. No wonder he was a little overwhelmed, like, I don't think you've got the right person, and I can't go this direction. When God begins to put a dream in your life and to make you dream big, it will seem insurmountable, or it's probably not God. If you can handle it yourself, it's just like what God told Gideon later on. You got too many people. You're going to think that you did it, so I'm going to take some people away. When I get up to preach most of the time I still get nervous. Now, other people may not notice that, but I still get nervous. Now, when I first started getting up to do public speaking, most of you have heard me tell stories about how shy I was in high school and even the early part of college, and I was, extremely so. But I remember when I would have to get up in these debate tournaments, and the morning of the debate tournaments on Saturday morning, I have to get up there and do public speaking. And I remember my hands would get so cold. If you ever shake my hand, like right before I speak, like this morning it wasn't that way, but a lot of times right before I speak, I'll get really nervous. Like right now, my hands are really cold. Okay, I could chill your drink with my finger. Now, you don't want me to do that, but I could do that. And that's just what happens. I don't know why it happens, but maybe for some of you, you have different things that happen where all of a sudden you get what I used to call cotton mouth, where it's like you got this stuff in the back of your throat. You can't ever get rid of it. And when you look in the mirror, you're like, what is that white stuff on the back of my throat? It's never been there before, only when I get up to speak. And you know exactly what I'm talking about. But when I first started out, not only did my hands get cold and I got the cotton mouth, some people will like throw up, you know what I'm saying, before they go to speak. That may be you. You've been like, oh man, every single time I get sick to my stomach. I had it going out the other direction, if you catch my drift. I would wake up on a Saturday, I'm not trying to be gross, I'd wake up on a Saturday morning for a debate tournament. I never had to worry about being plugged up as a kid. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I was regular because I knew every Saturday, man, here it came. Do you remember? And I'm not trying to be gross, I'm just telling you what happened. I would get up, and it was like the scene from Dumb and Dumber. You know that scene where he's like, oh! You know exactly what I'm talking about. And it would just freak me out, and I'd be like, God, why do I go through this? Send somebody else. I don't want to do this. And the first couple of times that I would finally, in my college years, that I would get up to speak, man, I knew on Sunday mornings I needed to plan an extra 30 minutes to my morning, if you know what I'm saying. And I would get to church, and people would shake my hand. They'd be like, you have the coldest hands, and I hated that. I hated shaking people's hands because I knew what they were going to say. They were going to shake my hand and go, oh, you have the coldest hands. You know, and I would say, cold hands, warm heart, man. You know what I'm saying? Because you don't have it. You come up with stuff to protect yourself. And I kid you not, at one of the churches that I would go to, I would go into the kitchen area and turn on the hot water. And I would warm up my hands, like, just blazing hot as I could stand it. And then I would dry off my hands and walk into the service and shake people's hands. Because I knew the first reaction they were going to have was, oh, my God, you got cold hands, you know. And I'm like, and you're a moron, and tomorrow I'll have warm hands, and you'll still be a moron, you know. Don't do that, okay? That's not real nice in church. You don't do that as a pastor and expect to retain people. I never said that to anybody, but I wanted to. But I would do that, man. My body would just shut down on me. And you know, in surrendering to God, God takes our insecurities and our fears and all of those other things that we're unsure about. And through that surrender is when his power is at work. That's when things begin to happen. So if you're an insecure, unsure, fearful person, you are a prime candidate for God doing something amazing in your life. You may say, you mean most of these leaders in the Bible are unsure? Oh, yeah. When you go home this evening or this next week, read through the rest of chapter 6 as to how many times Gideon asked for signs from God. Now, I know some people have used those signs. I'll just kind of give you a sidelight to this. Some people have used those signs to always say that, oh, this is what you do with God. God was really gracious to Gideon because there's other people that asked for signs that God got really, 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 really mad at, okay? And so a lot of people, I've heard him use, you know, the thing of the fleece in there before. If you read it in the next week or so, if you don't know this story very well, you'll know what I'm talking about as you read through there. And I'm not saying don't ever ask for some confirmations from some people, but at the same time, just be real careful about always expecting a sign from God. Because Gideon had already had an angel of the Lord appeared. I don't know what else he needed, you know? For me, an angel of the Lord appears and says, you know, buy up all the Dunkin' Donuts in the world.